morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Sitting across from me is...
Mike Cosentino was over here. Yes, Democratic Perspective. Yet one more time. We got a really good show today, though.
We're going to be talking to two great candidates for public office, or maybe three.
Maybe three, yeah.
We don't know.
Life is
going. This is Democratic Perspective.
That's
we're
right.
Flexible.
That's right. You want to organize, go see the report.
So you want to introduce our candidates... First, I've got to say we've got the candidate for the most important office here in Arizona, and that's not the governor. We have one of those guys too, maybe, but we have a candidate for treasurer. But the biggest, most important, most requiring the most education.
That's true.
That's right.
We have Bill Pierce for state mine inspector. He's got a crap load of qualifications here, which he's going to tell you about. We do have Bill Pierce for mine inspector. We do have Mark Cardenas for state treasurer.
Yes.
Who we have with us this morning. And we might have Kelly Fryer, we'll talk about, for governor, which is, and they're all fascinating candidates. We just came from the door breakfast, as we often do when we pick up interviewees for a Democratic Perspective. And each of these guys were entertaining as all hell. See, I'm and so we want to talk to one of the things I want to direct this to. Now, state treasurer is an interesting. Of course, that's where our current governor came out of, by the way. So that all of a sudden, the state treasurer job is getting a little more notice than before. But we're going to start with Bill Pierce. He's a candidate for state mine inspector. Now, one of the and he's got a great story. I want to shut up as soon as I can. But one of the things that the state mine inspector has a lot of influence over is water, which in Arizona and most of the West is a big deal. Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us a little more about yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a retired engineer. I've been in the engineering industry for over 40 years. Actually, from the time I started till I retired was 44 years, 5 months. Certifications happen to include MSHA, which is the Mining Safety and Health Administration. It's the mine version of OSHA. Also certified by OSHA with underground endorsement, competent person card, and also for confined spaces endorsement. Also certified through the Environmental Protection Agency in erosion control and groundwater protection. And I'm also licensed as a radiation safety officer licensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
One of the biggest deals in Arizona now is that we don't stop talking about a Democratic Perspective is uranium mining. And you got a lot to say about that.
Uranium mining is a hot button issue right now. We have 592 abandoned uranium mines on the Navajo Reservation alone.
That's an incredible figure. And you think because it's on the reservation, that's why nobody gives it? Darren?
Exactly. It's the largest radiation leak in Arizona or in U.S. history. Everybody thinks was Three Mile Island in 1979, Three Mile Island, Pennsylvania, the largest release of radioactive material. That is not true. The largest release of radiation in U.S. history came July the 16th, 1979, at a place called Church Rock, New Mexico. It's on the Navajo Reservation up near the Four Corners area, and it was an abandoned tailings pond from an abandoned uranium mine. The dike let loose around it, dumped 90 million gallons of radioactive sludge into the Rio Puerto River, where it flowed into Arizona for a distance of some 70 to 90 miles. And uranium is water-soluble. It's reactive to oxygen. It got into the groundwater on the Navajo Reservation. And even to this day, the Navajos do, most of the Navajos have to haul water. They have to go into Flagstaff with their pickup trucks with a water tank in the bed of it, load it up with water and haul it back home because the radiation has contaminated the drinking water supply on the reservation?
I worked on the reservation in 76 and 77 and 78. And, you know, a lot of the Native Americans, the Navajos particularly, have always hauled water because they lived in a rural place, not because they couldn't drink it. So now you're saying, when, and I've heard, and I'm wondering why, just like I think a lot of our listeners, I had no idea, and I was there, but as a, you know, white guy on the res, I wasn't exactly in the news loop, I guess, but the, so this is, and they want to do this in the Grand Canyon. They're hot to mine uranium in the Grand Canyon.
8,600 mining claims have been released in the Grand Canyon watershed area alone. Almost every one of those mining claims is to a company that mines uranium.
We're listening to Bill Pierce, state candidate for mine inspector.
But there's other issues with mine, even not uranium mines, not being inspected. And
that's right. That's
there's a certain number of deaths, are there, Bill, in mines that have not been blocked off? And
in the past 12 years, approximately 20 people have been killed in our abandoned mines throughout Arizona. A number of them, over half of them, I believe, were children that have gotten into an abandoned mine. That nobody's secured and taken care of and playing in them. If something happens, some of the old underground, the old timbers are rotted away, and it doesn't take very much vibration for them to come down and collapse with the person trapped inside.
What's it take for a Democrat to get elected mine inspector in Arizona?
I really don't know, because it hasn't happened since about 1975.
I see.
And you only got four people in your office, right? If you are elected, or you only got four inspectors in the entire state with all these abandoned mines, uranium and otherwise.
Yeah, the total number of mines in Arizona, we have 293 active mines in Arizona. We have 1,523 known abandoned mines. Plus the 592 known abandoned uranium mines on the reservation. Due to budget cuts, in 2010, the mine inspector's office had 12 field inspectors. We're now down to four.
That's a lot of statistics, folks, but the point is this is a much, much larger and much more complicated issue than people realize.
Well, that's it. There's a lot of work for the mining office to do, for the mine inspector to do, and it's important work. We're talking about environmental engineering that companies try to downplay. I want to, hopefully, we'll get to hear from Bill Pierce, candidate for state mine inspector, later on in the show, hopefully. But we want to make sure everybody gets a little time here. So we want to talk to Mark Cardenas. He's currently in the Arizona House of Representatives, and he is running for state treasurer. Tell us a little more about yourself, Mark, since I do such a lousy job.
No worries. Good morning, Jensen. Thank you for having me on the show, and it's been nice to get out of the heat. I think in Phoenix we're already hit 100.
So, oh, wow.
So it's really nice being here. Just a little bit about my background. I'm a first-generation American and Arizonan. I also am a combat veteran of the Iraq War. And lastly, one day when I was 25, I decided that I wanted to do something about my neighborhood. So I ran for office, and I won. For the past 6 years, I have been a member of the Appropriations Committee, which is budget, Ways and Means, which is taxes, and I know exactly where every single dollar is spent, and it's not good. I think you, at the breakfast earlier, they were talking about passing or extending the sales tax for county jails. Not many people know that the reason why we have to pass sales tax for jails is a failure of the state. And within our state constitution, actually because of the federal constitution saying that everyone gets the right to an attorney, we have what's called an indigent defense fund. And what the indigent defense fund is that it's a surcharge on all traffic tickets, and it goes $6 million that's supposed to reimburse or pay for public defenders for people that have been charged for a crime. And so every year the state sweeps that $6 million. And so they pass that cost on to your county. And so this is why the people of Yavapai County are having to pick up the tab for the state's failure. I know where every single dollar is spent. I'm running for state treasurer because the dollars, the priorities of the legislature in terms of the budget being a reflection of the state's priorities, are wrong. They're not the priorities of the people. And so we're here Bill Kelly and I are here because we're going to change that come this November.
So you say you spend money on things you think are important.
Exactly.
Is it true that we run this whole state on $10 billion?
It really depends on who you ask.
I'm asking you.
So we...
We've got you in the studio. You're trapped. Somebody hold the door.
It was an easy... You gave me that opening
sure.
and I just...
Sure, yeah. We do run the state on $10 billion. States of comparable size are running on double the money that
exactly.
we need.
Exactly. That was my point.
We have, you know, just last week there was a report that said that the state of Arizona only spends $900,000 on homeless services to put them back to work, put them in shelter, where the state of Massachusetts puts $12 million, and we're not having people that are indigent, people that are on the streets, people that have, no mental health counseling. And so it's a sad travesty that we have stopped caring. I'm speaking about the statewide Republicans in office, but they've stopped caring about the people that are supposed to vote for them, that are putting them in office. They care more about re-election. They care more about pleasing donors than they care about pleasing average, everyday Arizonans.
So what can you do, Mark, as treasurer to undo this? I understand you have extensive, 500-page plans. but what can you do? Because the state doesn't have enough money to do things right.
Sure.
I mean, the mine inspector's office is an example. That they've dropped the number of inspectors. People die in these mines. They're open. It's dangerous to have them. Nobody's tracking what's going on because they don't have enough money. How are you going to get more money for essential state services?
You have to. So what needs to happen is that we have to go back to the people that are at the legislature with their hands out every year, the millionaires and the billionaires that are digging in their couch cushions, coming up with $100,000 to buy a bunch of politicians to get their targeted tax break. We have to go back and tell them we can't afford this anymore. We have teachers that are on food stamps. We have teachers that have roommates in order to remain as a teacher. We have a Department of Child Safety caseworkers that are being laid off, that are underpaid, that feel as if they're doing this because they love what they do. They feel as if they have an impact. We have to go back, take a hard look at our state finances, and one, we have to look at raising revenue from multiple funding sources. You can't keep cutting taxes and saying we're going to tax ourselves to prosperity because we see the desolation that's been left behind in terms of what we, the $10 billion. It's not nearly enough what we need to do to pay our teachers to fulfill our obligations between us and the taxpayer.
So why do they keep cutting taxes, keep cutting corporate taxes over and over? It hasn't produced the kind of boom they claimed it would. I mean, Arizona is doing fairly well in terms of incoming businesses and stuff, but that's because it's
certain
Arizona.
Certain segments of the population are. Yeah. Well, take a look around.
Sure. I think I actually purchased a book called The End of Loyalty, and in that book it mentioned that 49% of people throughout the country are working minimum wage jobs now. The general fund has to subsidize those jobs. The job that someone gets at Walmart, the $10.50 an hour job, we have to put they qualify for food stamps, they qualify for housing, they qualify for a myriad of government services, and so. But at the same time, Walmart was very good at getting their property taxes lowered. They saved about, collectively on the Class 1 property tax ratio, they saved over $300 million last year. The taxpayers are, again, picking up the tab for that.
I see.
It's time to make them pay. And that's what the plan of whoever's in the governor's office, I hope that it's one of our Democratic I really hope it's one of our Democratic candidates, but I plan to work hand in hand to develop a solid, found financial plan to ensure that we can pay our bills to keep our promises to average, everyday Arizonans.
How can the state treasurer help? What is the state and once again, this is a Democratic perspective. And sometimes we do basic stuff like this. What does the state treasurer do? How can he help, though?
Sure.
At least none of you guys is running for Corporation Commission, which we've been explaining for the last 7 years.
I love every minute of it.
I was asked to run for CorpCom this past cycle, and I went to one CorpCom meeting. It was like watching paint dry.
There you go.
And so, no, I'm not going to do that. In all honesty, the treasurer's constitutional job is to invest and divest trust funds, health insurance plans, retirement systems that the treasurer is in charge of, which is Corp, EORP, ASRS, and PSPRS. But at the same time, you brought up a fantastic point, and I'm asked that all the time. What does the treasurer do? because no one really knows. And that is a blessing.
Campaigns for governor, apparently, but that was before, not now.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to be governor, be treasurer. I don't want to be governor, though. I want to one day retire and, I don't know, live off of my pension.
Live in Sedona.
Yeah, where it's cooler. So I would say the blessing of no one knowing what the treasurer really does is I can create this wonderful new idea of becoming the financial watchdog of the state. I mean, ensuring that we pay the bills that we owe. In all honesty, the education plan that I spent, I don't know, 3 weeks coming up with, I'm not going to be a vote in the legislature. I'm not going to be the governor. But at the same time, you have the treasurer has a wonderful bully pulpit that we saw Jeff DeWitt use in Prop 123 when he said this is a bad deal for Arizonans. And people organized and they believe based off of those words because he is the financial manager of a major state in this country. And I plan to use that bully pulpit to do the same to give average everyday Arizonans that same tax break.
Let me use you to... Okay. Before we do this, could we just tell us what's going on with the state treasurer right now? If you don't, you know, kind of catch us up on that. DeWitt was the treasurer, and that would have been, we're assuming, your opponent. You would have run against the incumbent, but all that has changed. So at least tell us the state of the office.
Sure. So the previous treasurer, Mr. DeWitt, took a job to be the CFO of NASA. So he was the CFO of Arizona, now it's the CFO to land people on Mars one day. So what happened is that this past week, a person named Eileen Klein was appointed to the seat, not running again, and so it's an open seat.
There we go.
And so it's it's going to be all hands on deck after now, and then especially after August, once the primary happens, because we got to get Democrats up and down the ballot elected.
All right. That's
so why
great.
Should we vote for you, Mark, and rather than the other Mark?
I would say that it's not. I'm running.
I mean, he's a great candidate too. So
sure.
you both really have good qualification.
I've always said if you want a good treasurer, vote for Mark. I would say that Mark is a great guy. He and I are actually very aligned on many issues. The difference between Mark and I is that I know the ins and outs of the budget. I know how to raise revenue. I know how to raise revenue without even raising your taxes. Now, it's not enough to pay teachers what they need to, but there's different ways that you can squeeze enough money. But at the same time, there is a point when you can't squeeze any more money, and we're almost at that point now.
Yeah.
I have an expert grasp of state finances that I believe, as from my experience in the State House and the Appropriations Committee, that will lead to ensuring that we have a better financial future for all Arizonans.
So let's go from major offices to a minor office, the governor of Arizona.
We have a governor candidate in the studio this morning. Kelly Fryer is running for governor. Kelly has a great Facebook page with a lot of interesting conversation. I had a friend text me, by the way, telling me he takes part. And he's, I don't want to say radical, but he's certainly a vocal individual. And so Kelly Fryer, I'm doing, consistently lousy job of introducing our guest this morning. So you're going to tell us a little more about yourself, please.
I am. First of all, just thanks for having me on the air. I got to tell you, there is no better place in the state to wake up in the morning than Sedona. It was just beautiful here today. Thanks for having me on. So I am, we're radio right now, so I'm just going to say what might not be completely obvious. I am a woman, and like a lot of women in this state and in this country right now, I am ticked off with what's going on. I've spent my career working, really fighting for progressive causes, working in grassroots organizations of all kinds. And I've got about 25 years of experience in senior leadership and CEO positions. I am currently the CEO of the YWCA in Southern Arizona. And the mission of the YW, for those listeners who don't know, we're not the YMCA. We don't have a pool. The YWCA is committed to ending racism, empowering women, and promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all.
But no swimming pool.
No swimming pool. We serve about 50,000 people a year across southern Arizona, and we do a lot of work with women and families. We have workforce development programs. We run a small business center. We help entrepreneurs start and grow businesses, get access to capital to grow their businesses. And I've just watched, you know, in my time at the YW, as women and families who are trying really hard to get themselves out of poverty, into a better financial situation, I've just watched the policies and the budget decisions of this state crush their hopes and dreams and efforts. I think it's wrong. I'm fed up. I'm running to be governor to change that.
What's your chances?
Well, what's
let me put this. Let me reframe the question a little better. It takes two things in my mind after doing this and being politically active for a long time. You need name recognition, you need money. How are you doing on both of those things?
Well, you know what? I have to say I would disagree with your view.
What's it take?
Because I think it's a different time. We are in a, you know, one of the things that Donald Trump proved is anybody can get elected.
There you go.
You know, we're watching across this country as new faces, new leaders with bold, progressive voices, with a platform that is honest, authentic, transparent. We're watching people, very unlikely people, get elected to office all across this country. You know, the first trans woman was elected to the state house in Virginia. Right. Charlotte, North Carolina, has their first African-American female mayor. We're watching this happen all across the state. So what does it take to get elected in Arizona this year? I think that's a great question. Doug Ducey is a formidable force. He's got Koch brothers money behind him. They spent $12 million to get him elected the first time. So my plan is to get around the state, meet as many people as I possibly can. This is an old-fashioned Bruce Babbitt-style campaign.
How are you going to do it? What are you going to do exactly?
Once I'm governor?
To get elected, you're going to travel the state?
Yep.
You actually talk to people?
Yeah, I'm talking to people. I've been, since February 1st, I've been just about 9,000 miles around the state. I've talked with thousands of people. And I just want to say clearly, I'm not just going to talk to big donors and have house parties, right? That's how expensive consultants, political consultants, tell Democrats to win.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, get on the phone, spend time talking to donors, have house parties, focus on Maricopa County, and play it safe. That's what the expensive consultants will say. Play it safe.
Well, there's 4.5 million people down there, and the rest of the state is what, maybe 2 million?
You know, there is a path to victory, and my path to victory is through small towns and rural communities and underserved urban neighborhoods in the state.
Right. For oversimplification, the state, if it's divided in half on red and blue issues.
Mm-hmm.
Then places like Sedona, places like Yavapai County become players. And so your strategy, as far as this guy over here is concerned on the mic, is sound. It's a sound strategy because we can make the difference. Rural Arizona can make the difference.
That's exactly right. Yeah, Janet Napolitano won because she won Pima County and she won Navajo.
We had enough votes. I wasn't here, but there was enough votes in Sedona almost to put her over to make the difference in her winning.
Sure.
That she left Sedona with that many Democratic votes.
Obviously, there was one lady at the breakfast this morning who was convinced that Sedona had put Janet over the top.
It was close. I've done the statistics.
Well, we're going to let her.
If they want to claim that, that's
exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the deal.
They did a wonderful job.
The deal. There hasn't been a Democratic candidate for governor that has paid attention to the rural communities and small towns since Janet Napolitano, because those fancy consultants from New York City and Washington, D.C. come in. They take a lot of our money and they give us really bad advice. We haven't won since. So part of the problem in Arizona, or part of the challenge, is that the primary election is so close to the general.
Yeah.
So if you spend all your time in Maricopa County during the long primary season and you haven't paid any attention to the folks around the outside of the state. There just isn't enough time between the primary and the general to get out there and reach everybody. And we need every single vote to win.
Let's turn from running for election to what your plans are if you're elected governor of Arizona.
I'm running for this office because I believe that Arizona not only should but can work for every single person in the state. You know, we've been playing a zero-sum game. We pit teachers against small business owners. We pit, you know, people who want to make a higher wage against it. We've been divided by the billionaires who have bought our government for long enough. So my plan is to bring, I'll talk issues with you all day long, but really my bottom line is to bring a whole different value set to the governor's office. Our state has been treating people like we're disposable, like people are disposable. You know, if you're economically poor, if you are a kid, if you are an immigrant, if you're a person who has been involved in the criminal justice system, we treat people like they're disposable. What I'll bring to the governor's office is a value system that says people come first.
But can you get the money that Mark is talking about to actually change things? Because without increased revenue, trying to run the state on its current budget, how would you do that? You have to get more money, and you have to be able to tax who?
No, that's exactly right. There isn't enough revenue. You know, one of the problems with Ducey's plan, and frankly with some of the other plans I'm hearing from some of the other candidates, is that it's just moving money around. And it's, you know, it's looking to tweak the tax code. We can't tweak our way out of the budget crisis that we're in right now. We need more revenue.
And that's a hard thing to say as a candidate. And I would say out to all three of you that's a hard thing to say. State needs more revenue. And we heard Bill Sapir say it about the mine inspector. Mine inspector's office needs more revenue to have more inspectors. And Mark has a lot of the same plan. So that takes some courage, political courage, to say that the state needs more revenue. But what are you going to do with it when you do get the revenue? What are going to be your priorities?
Yeah, well, let me just say, yes, it does. It does take some. How did you say it? It takes some political courage. Well, I'm not a politician. You know, I'm somebody that runs businesses, and whether they're for-profit, non-profit, or faith-based, and I'm somebody that cares about the state. I'm not running because this is another step on my career ladder. I'm running to actually change things. So I'm saying things that are true, whether it takes courage or not, they're true. We don't have enough money in the state. Mark said it. You know, other states of our size, their budgets are twice as big. We don't have money in our budget because we've been giving tax breaks to the super wealthy, and tax incentives to corporations. And I don't know how, you know, I mean, we knew that Doug Ducey was a bad businessman when we elected him governor. And he has proven to be a terrible businessman. You can't run your house without money. You can't run your business without money. We can't run the state without money. So we need to raise, here's what we need to do. We need to look at millionaires and we need to raise their taxes. I think that we need to create a couple of new state income tax brackets. The top income tax bracket in the state is if you make $1 million, you pay just about the same rate of taxes as somebody who makes $50,000. That's wrong.
In your experience, how do the millionaires feel about that?
You know, I'm in rooms of millionaires a lot. You know, I run a nonprofit, and so I do a lot of fundraising. And I got to tell you, people who are in that wealthy elite in this state, most of them know this is the problem. They say to me, you know, Kelly, I don't pay enough taxes. I don't pay enough taxes. They give a lot of money to organizations like mine, I think partly because they feel guilty, you know. People in this state know that I had a friend who happens to be in that class say to me, wealth does not trickle down. That has proven to be false.
Right.
But pain trickles up.
There you go.
So folks who are, you know, regular folks who are really struggling in this state, and that's almost all of us, frankly, more than half of the kids in this state live in homes that that are financially unstable. I mean, that is a moral crisis. And, you know, we feel pain. But folks at the top, eventually, the whole thing comes crumbling down.
There are a lot of people working, but there's lots of needs. I mean, you don't, like I said, I was being a smart guy before and saying, just look around. There's Tucson especially. I spent a lot of time in Tucson, and the homeless thing down there is overwhelming. One of the things you spoke on this morning, and one of the problems we mentioned, I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the air, but getting the candidates from the breakfast is that you've sort of spent your message there. And when you get here, you either got to repeat it if you're, you know, like a good high school teacher.
Good candidate.
Yeah, you're
repeat.
Not worried about giving the same message because it's what you do and you give it with the same. But you talked about love this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about it in a way that I've never heard a candidate talk about it. Could we do a little bit of that?
You know, I throughout my career, I have been in organizations and communities where my job was to help people across the political spectrum come together, to see what they share, to really come together around shared values. I spent the first 15 years of my career as a senior pastor of congregations that were in trouble. I kind of specialize actually in walking into organizations that are in trouble and turning them around. And, you know, I'm telling you, you know, somebody said, Kelly, but, you know, you don't have any experience in politics. Well, it's not true. I ran an organization called Arizona List during the 2012 election cycle, which elects women to public office in Arizona. But my answer really is, are you kidding me? I was a pastor. There is nothing more political than
nothing
a church.
Nothing more political than really is. Absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, I have a long career of helping people across all the things that usually divide us come together around a shared set of values to develop an inclusive vision that moves us forward and to help people do things that matter. I really believe that at the heart of our community, at the heart of our government, at the heart of our country, needs to be really a spirit of love. You know, what I said this morning, I'll say it right now. I'm not talking about Valentine's Day love. I'm talking about the kind of love that is a decision. It's a choice that you make. I mean, you know, I don't know that I always feel all warm and fuzzy towards my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she leaves shoes all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
I trip over them. I'm always picking up her shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It ticks me off.
Mm-hmm.
But I make a decision every single day to stay in that relationship, right? That's the kind of love I'm talking about. I'm talking about a fierce, ferocious love that stays in really difficult situations because we know that our lives are tied to each other. And that's the kind of love that I think we need in this state. Our future is tied to each other. So I'm talking about the kind of love that, you know, says every kid in the state is my kid, that every person in the state, immigrant, non-immigrant, is a human being. And I'm responsible for making sure that person's basic human rights are being met. Yep. Love at the center.
That sounds wonderful. And like I said, different compared to most. Bill Pierce, candidate for state mining inspector. What kind of governor do you have to work with? What do you need in a governor to be able to do your state mine inspector? Now, we want to mention that this office is elected in Arizona. In most places, if you've got any experience in politics, this is an appointed business. This is one of the perks of being governor if you're in a lot, especially in the West. If you're in a lot of, or any environmental engineering job, it's one of those things you get to appoint. This is elected. It's one of the cool things about Arizona. If we're looking for cool things about Arizona, Corporation Commission is a cool thing, as we've said before, and this electing the state mining person is also a cool thing.
From Arizona's original sort of progressive approach to politics. So did all the referendums, Mike,
yes.
And the ability to be able to change things. So you're in mine inspector. You've gotten elected. What do you need from the governor in order to make your office work better?
Basically, from the governor, we need to have an ear that will listen to us because our people are out there in the field seeing what's going on or trying to get out in the field, but we don't have the money. One of the largest mines in Arizona is supposed to be inspected four times a year by federal standards. It got inspected twice last year because there was no money to do the second and third quarter inspections. There were 218 violations of MSHA safety rules during the first inspection. No re-inspection because there was no budget to do it with. The second inspection of the year, that was in January of 2017. In December of 2017, they finally got their second inspection. Another 78 safety violations at that inspection.
Now, I've seen the open-pit mine at Kearney. I've seen the open-pit mine at Bisbee. These are massive operations. And if you've ever seen an open-pit mine, listeners, I have to admit, this is not a topic we talk about on Democratic Perspective
next
very
week,
often.
Open pit mining.
Well,
right here.
You know, they are beautiful and frightening and horrible all at the same time. It's like looking at another world. And so I've never thought about it. This is the mine inspections. This is what you guys do. You go into these open pit mines and find ways that workers can stay safe, I imagine.
We had a fatality in one of the open pit mines in southern Arizona late last year, or about mid-year. A gentleman that had a number of years working in the mines got ran over by a mine truck. Now, to give you an idea on the size of a mine truck, I stand 6 feet 2 inches tall. The top of my head comes about even with the center hub of the front tire on that truck.
Yeah,
these tires are about almost 13 feet high.
They're absolute monsters, if you
haven't seen
them. Yes,
they are. I saw photographs of the pickup truck that the guy that died in. I saw pictures of his truck after it was hit. Like I said, I'm 6'2". The truck it was a full-size pickup truck, and what was left of it wouldn't have even come to my knees if I was standing beside it. The mine truck went the length of the truck right over top of it. He had pulled out onto the haul road at the wrong time.
So you need someone who cares about the miners and mine workers and cares about pollution and cares about what happens to all these tailings like the uranium and so forth and so on.
I wanted to get back to...
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I want to talk to Mark Cardenas, who's running for a state treasurer, and he's running a genteel campaign, for want of a better term. He might come up with, but he and Mark Manoil are deciding, you know what, if you want a good treasurer, vote for Mark. They have the same first name. First of all, we should mention that that's refreshing. We sort of just went over that, but we said, okay, that's who this particular Mark Cardenas is. We had Mark Manoil on the show a while back, and we had some great conversation. So the exciting part is we have two great Democratic candidates for state treasurer, and they decided to run sort of this non-hostile campaign. And to that end, I guess that we have three great candidates for governor in Kelly Fryer and David Garcia and Steve
Farley. They are great. We've interviewed them all here. Their shows are available on podcasts. If you want to see what they had to say, you can just go to podcast on vvid.org and get the podcast for these.
So this is a labor, and Democratic Perspective is sure going to try to help you. This job of sorting out the great Democratic candidates that we have. And these, I gotta say, the difference between Democratic and Republican candidates is so, to me, obvious. You know, the authenticity, the directness of purpose, with the Democrats is clear, where the Republicans do all these negative things, they do all the wedge issues, and I guess making people angry makes people vote. We know that.
It does. It's a big motivator. Anger and hatred is a big motivator, always been in human history.
And so we don't hear that much. You and I have been doing this a long time. We don't hear any of that from our Democratic candidates. I just want to, say good on you guys for running the kinds of campaigns, and I hear it most from the Mark campaign, but they do kind of tout their qualifications. So give us one more difference between you and Mark Manoil that would excite our listeners.
Sure. I would say that you're exactly right. Mark and I think in terms of the political atmosphere that we see nowadays. I am tired of campaigns being about how terrible the other person is. And then we all look back and we're aghast when someone who must not be named tweets something stupid on Twitter, and then it's just a race to the bottom at that point. And so I have to set an example not only for Arizona but for my niece and nephew. I have to go to bed at night knowing that I did the right thing every day. Now, the difference between Mark Manoil is we have different skill sets. His skill set is in the property tax law. My skill set is government finance. Before I ran for office, I was actually an accountant at the Department of Defense, and I know how much the government wastes in terms of dollars that they on stupid programs that they should be spending on Medicare and Social Security. The social safety net not only trickles down to Arizona, and so we spend. I know where the bodies are buried. But at the same time, my expertise in government finance, how to spend that money, how to put the money in order to deliver on the promises that we're going to make to our voters or to the people of Arizona to get elected, because we're going to make some promises, we have to deliver on those promises. I know how to do that.
I see. Excellent. Yes, account for DOD. That's wonderful. All right, folks, we don't have a lot of time left, but we do want to remind you that you can listen to this show and all our shows on our website, vvid.org. And please go to Democratic Perspective. We have our podcast on there, so this show will be up in a few days.
We have 3 minutes. You have 1 minute each to sum up your campaigns.
What an egalitarian guy. See, I would have went with the governor. Go ahead.
You know, I have to tell you, I am angry. And I think that there are a lot of progressives who are angry about
Absolutely.
What is happening. It's not an anger that comes from hate. It's an anger that comes from love. Right. I love this state. I love this. I love this. The land. I love the people of this state. I love the kids of this state. I love my own family. I love my wife. And I'm sick and tired of the way this state tries to, you know, tell me that how I live and who I love is wrong. I'm tired of the way that this state hurts the people that I love and the communities that I care about. And I'm angry about that. And I'm running because I think we need to turn that anger and that frustration into positive change. I think this is a moment when we can do that. And I'm ready to take the fight to Doug Ducey this November.
Bill?
Okay, I just love being in Arizona. I've been an Arizona resident since 1985. I moved to Arizona for better opportunities. I retired in 2012, and all of a sudden a friend of mine mentioned on Facebook, hey, we need to get somebody running for the mine inspector's office. I told him, so with my qualifications, I thought, why not? That gives us a Democrat running in at least one Democrat in every slot statewide. The first time in the years that I can remember, anyway.
Yes, I love saying that, and, by the way, at meetings.
I've met all of the other candidates, and I love every one of them. It makes it difficult for me to figure out who to vote for because I love all three candidates for governor. I think highly of them. I think very highly of our candidates for the treasurer. I like both men. I like everybody here, so it's really good opportunity for me, and we can turn this state around and maybe even get some good safety into our workers.
So, Mark, sum up the Democratic campaigns. I mean, you guys have primaries and stuff. Just right now, for this next election.
Well, regardless of whoever wins the primary, I promise you the Democrats have a better plan. We have a better plan for education. We have a better plan for health care. We have a better plan for rural Arizona. I promise you that, and after August is over, you're going to be satisfied with the candidates. Obviously, I believe I'm the best one for treasurer, but at the same time, we're on a good trajectory. The path for Arizona looks bright, and the blue wave is coming, and we're going to give you a reason to vote.
Find our podcast on vvid.org. You can listen to all our shows. It's a great political library that's becoming. Don't forget to check out Democrats of the Red Rocks Breakfasts at 8:30 on the third Thursday.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.